And so I couldn't breathe. And finally, she whispers in my ear, "I think you have PTSD."
I'm Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, founder of Grapevine Health and your host of the Grapevine Health Podcast, a podcast highlighting stories, health insights, and experiences of community members. We started this podcast because too often discussions and decision-making about health and the healthcare system don't include perspectives from the people we serve. So listeners, if you have a personal story or an experience from working in the community or on the front lines of healthcare, contact us and we might have you on the show. Today I'm talking to Jessica Brooks, a health equity advocate and Black mother who shares horrific healthcare experiences during her pregnancies. So Jessica, it's great to see you. Tell us how you're doing during the pandemic and what's going on with you.
Oh my goodness. The pandemic has, I'm a mother of four. Wife and mother of four. So the pandemic has impacted me in a lot of ways, work-wise and being a school teacher facilitator at times, having multiple children home at work, basically living at work while raising children is the best way I can describe it. So it's been rewarding in a lot of ways as well. But definitely challenging. I've actually taken this month a little bit of a step back from the nonprofit that I lead to help my seven-year-old in her studies and giving her a little bit more attention. So, but we've remained healthy. No one in my household has been impacted by COVID-19. And so I'm excited that we've been able to do that as well as maintain our sanity.
Yeah. Well, I wanted people to hear from you because I know you started a really interesting company. So tell us briefly about that company. And more importantly, I want people to hear why you started the company.
Sure. So that's one of the things that I would say is has been birthed out of COVID, the pandemic. And it's a year now that I started Health Desk. And Health Desk is a platform that is designed to serve patients real time while they're in at a point of care in a facility when they're feeling bias, discrimination, not considered. And they believe that if they don't get additional help at that time, that an adverse outcome or even death can occur. So we are an advocacy service, but we serve both the patient and we have the ability to serve the facility, to allow the facility to get insight into what's happening with their patients real time, getting data and insights that they don't get at least timely to be able to address root cause issues and ultimately stem this issue and hopefully transition their culture at some point with data and analytics that we can provide them to be an advocate for their own patient. But our primary focus is the patient. And this was really birthed out of prior to COVID-19, prior to 2020, my own personal experiences through giving childbirth and just having difficult being treated wrong in the healthcare system.
Tell us what happened.
Sure. So I have actually three birth stories that really led to my passion around this. The first, I was 24, I was younger, I was a single parent, and I worked for a defense contractor at the time, so insurance wasn't an issue. The myths around this being a poor Black woman issue or poor person issue is not true at all. Educated, I had good insurance with a large global defense contractor. Came home to Pittsburgh, where I'm from New Jersey, to have my child, and was ultimately, told that on my due date that I needed to go in to have an induction. I really didn't want that, but, listened to the doctor, went in, And after 13 hours of being induced with Pitocin, no medication, I was told that nothing was happening. I need to go in for a C-section. So went in for the C-section, adverse outcome to the anesthesia, and vomiting. My sister was with me at the time, and I remember her asking, was I dying? My blood pressures were going really low. Thank God I didn't. And Jesse came out alive and healthy. In my recovery, once I finally had time with him, the lactation nurse was very, very basically accusing me of killing him because he wasn't latching on. And so this culmination of these activities in such a short period of time, the lack of empathy, ultimately ended up in postpartum depression. And then second child, at this point, I'm married. We have a plan. I know right now, at this point, I want to try VBAC. I know that I'm
VBAC. What's VBAC?
Having a vaginal birth after a C-section. So I want to ensure that I can do that. Try again. I know that my reaction to anesthesia, so I'm letting them know up front. Everything that happened to me the first time, I'm being as proactive as possible. And at this point, I work for a health insurance company. We had a friend who was an advocate, an administrator in the hospital. So we meet ahead of time, let them know we're having a baby. Everything you can do to be proactive. Get in for ultimately coerced, I would say, to go in for a procedure, but maybe that's a strong word, that ultimately would have never worked, called a Foley bulb. And when I had a second opinion while in the hospital with an OB at another hospital system, he said that would have never worked for you. But at this point, I'm in there for hours, recommended to get induced again. I allow that to happen. 13 hours again, no medication, no budging, told you should go to have a C-section. And I did. Then in that operating room, I was told that I was stuck 14 times in my back by a resident, although the head anesthesiologist was right there before she.
Because they were trying to, what were they trying to do?
Numb me for the surgery. So to give me my spinal. And so before I could be cut for the surgery, I was stuck 14 times in my back, screaming. My husband's two double doors behind me, hears me screaming at the top of my lungs. I can feel the pain shooting down my legs. And then finally the head anesthesiologist intervened. She ended up being able to get me numb. In that time frame, she tells my husband why it's taking so long and ultimately blamed it on my back. And then that led to, just a traumatic birthing experience. Now my last and third one, fourth one, final four, we call him MJ. He's actually going to be four soon. So this was a little bit more recent. And at this point, I'm the CEO of the Pittsburgh Business Group on Health, this major employer coalition. I have access to CEOs of hospital systems at this point. So now I'm like, I meet with the CEO of the hospital before I have the baby. I have vouchers and parking vouchers and lunch vouchers and meet with the labor and delivery floor and the head charge nurse and the VIP treatment. I'm designated in some way as VIP. I know that because the nurses were like, who are you? When they had to come in and the frequency that they had to come in and treat me with. And they're like, what do you do? Who are you? It was an interesting, very different experience. And it turns out though, however, what I didn't tell you is that for the second child, one of the doctors in the practice asked me if my husband was the father of my first child. And I had asked, what is the relevance of that? And she really? Said, yes. And she said, oh, it has something to do with genetics. And then she mumbled on and moved on really quickly. So I've mentioned that now because for my fourth child, at this point, I don't allow you to take my kids before. Now I'm bound to C-sections, right? So I don't allow you to take my kids before my due date. You could, if the due date works or after, that's fine, but not on my, not before my due date. What I could control in these, at this point I controlled, and that was one thing I could control. With that said, because I wouldn't allow him to be taken earlier, I was stuck with her to deliver him, which I had kicked her off my case for my second child. And then I ended up with the head anesthesiologist again, because they were giving me the VIP treatment. And that triggered trauma for me at the end when I went in to get prepped, and my blood pressure spiked significantly. I couldn't go into surgery for quite some time until they were able to get my blood pressure down. I'm in the, finally in the operating room right before she's to give me a spinal. I'm hyperventilating. I can't breathe. And so I couldn't breathe. And finally she whispers in my ear, "I think you have PTSD." And I'm thinking, well, one, wow, what can I do with that information right now? I'm about to go under surgery. You're telling me I have PTSD? Leaves out, tells my husband, "It's taking a while because I really think your wife has PTSD." Wow. Comes back, you know, we do the surgery, baby's delivered, and ultimately ended up kicking in. And I had, and that familiar experience of postpartum depression came back. And do you know what? Just think about the healthcare delivery system and think, no one reached back to me with this PTSD diagnosis and said, "Hey, do you need help? We know some things happened here." Not even my OB who delivered the baby. It took weeks for her to finally say, "Hey, I saw a survey you filled out, and it looks like you may be having some trouble. You should call this number to see if you can get help." And so those were my experiences personally that really led to me having understanding around what can happen and what could really go wrong. And I'm grateful to be alive. Many don't survive. And so either if it's by the hands of bias or stigma or through suicide with postpartum depression. So I don't take that lightly. And then in 2019, I had many women reaching out to me seemingly randomly through instant messenger and social media. And the commonality is that they were all Black women. They were either the patient or the someone advocating for the patient. And they were all different conditions, but they were all Black women at the point of care. And so that was summer 2019, different issues, migraines. One had an operation at a women's hospital, but it wasn't pregnancy related. Another was pregnancy. Then it got closer to home with my niece who had gotten shot in her abdomen, 16 years old, and how they were treating her and trying to get her out of the hospital. And then my mother-in-law in Atlanta. And so that, and then a report came out in Pittsburgh in September 2019, commissioned by the city, but conducted by the University of Pittsburgh. And it said that this was one of the worst places in America for Black women to live. And their maternal mortality rates were one of the lowest in the country compared to 89 cities. Cancer rates, cardiovascular outcomes for Black men across a variety of different social determinants of health, poverty, income, education, employment. And so that really called me to say, okay, I cannot be a Black woman leader at this time leading the Pittsburgh Business Group on Health, an employer coalition, and not make health equity a priority and a strategic imperative for us. And we have to rally around this quickly. COVID-19 hit and we were shut down in March. And I had a little bit of time before really getting into the business of COVID-19 through my coalition work. And couldn't sleep, Lisa. Like I could not sleep at night. And that's how Health Desk was born. It just all came to me when I started seeing the headlines on the health disparities and how we were dying 2-3 times in some states, 4 times the rate of our white counterparts from COVID-19. My experiences that summer prior and that report in Pittsburgh that said this is one of the worst places for Black people and Black women in particular to live. And then my personal experiences, I really am called to the responsibility of Health Desk.
There's so much in your story. You are someone with a lot of insight, access, experience. I just, you know, I can't imagine what someone who doesn't have the resources and the access would do in that situation. So what advice do you give people who don't have the insight, access, and experience you do, when they encounter these feelings or these experiences, the judgment, the disrespect, what's your advice to them?
What I've seen patients do is be very clear when they can. Now, if you're in extreme pain, it's really difficult. But if you're not, you can say, I'm aware of the health disparities. I'm aware that, you know, people who look like me may have an adverse outcome. I really want to hear from you that an assurance that my skin won't get in the way of my care, that you're going to treat me and not my skin color. You're going to treat me and my condition and not my race. And I think it's perfectly fine and acceptable and should happen that we're empowered to be clear that we're aware of these things. I know you are too. And please assure me that that's not going to be an issue for you treating me and caring for me. Also, I've reached out to this administration of hospitals once I achieved a certain position and once I achieved a certain influence in the marketplace. If I would know what I know now, if I knew back then when I was 24 having my first child, I would have reached out to administration then. Mm-hmm. I may or may not have gotten the same response, but I would have. I would have had these conversations with my OBGYN, each one of them in the office at that time. I would have been clear with the woman who asked me about how many baby daddies I had, that was a stigma that I felt that she was putting on me, and that I thought that was a concern. And so I really encourage patients to have authentic conversations with their physicians and their doctors. In emergencies, that's more difficult to do, Lisa. You know, you're pulled in, whatever the situation may be. My niece, she was 16 when she was shot at a high school graduation party. She in no way could have had any of these conversations in an ambulance or in the helicopter. And at that point, it's an emergency. Her mom couldn't say, hey, by the way, make sure you treat her with dignity while you're trying to get that bullet out of her. You really can't do that until after the fact, right? When they're in recovery and you can start having conversations, and that's when we did advocate. But I would say, know that you do have a voice and that you can share what you do know, which if you do know bias exists, share that. If you do know an experience, like in my case, I have a bad reaction to anesthesia. I have to get medication before I even get that to not have that reaction as bad. If you know that, share what you can as early as you can to mitigate the risks. And shortly, the health desk will be there to help you too.
What I'm hearing from you is there's a lot of paternalism in healthcare, people thinking they know more about you or what's better for you than you do. What's your message to healthcare providers and health system leaders to address this?
Listen, do no more harm. Understand and do your own work intentionally around bias and anti-racism specifically, and understand with empathy when your patients come in and they're scared. And they're not necessarily scared of what's happening to them, but they're scared of you potentially. Hear that and then do something with that information.
Thank you so much, Jessica. This is a very sobering conversation, but I hope people will heed what you have to say and make steps to improve it so people don't have experiences like you have endured. So thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
That was Jessica Brooks sharing healthcare experiences that led her to found Health Desk, an organization that advocates for patients and seeks action to address bias and racism in healthcare.
Thanks for listening to the Grapevine Health Podcast. Our producer is Nicholas Elias. Please like us on social media. You can find us at Grapevine Health on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Health Grapevine. Until next time, I'm Dr. Lisa, signing off.